Good afternoon. I'm Rick Barton, co-director of the Post-Conflict Reconstruction Project with Karen von Hippel, who is right here at the back door. And welcome to everybody. I can feel your anticipation since the room quieted already. We're really very pleased to have this program this afternoon and want to thank in particular Doug Johnson, who's the president of the International Center for Religion and Diplomacy, who has helped to bring our guests here today, and also on behalf of Ambassador Tezi Schaefer of the South Asia program here, which is co-sponsoring this event. I just want to thank her as well. So Doug is a great partner, somebody that we've enjoyed working with, who spent a number of years here at CSIS before founding the International Center, and he was a great help to us when we were traveling in Pakistan this past year, introducing us to a range of really interesting people, and has had some valuable experiences that I'm sure will come out in the course of our conversation here today. So, Doug, thanks.
Thank you very much, Rick. Thanks to your program and to Ambassador Schaefer's South Asia program for sponsoring today's event. Thank you all for coming. I just want to, by way of background, say just a couple of minutes to bring you up to speed. For 5 years now, our center has been involved in reforming the madrasas in Pakistan. Now, as many of you know, these schools once enjoyed a glorious history. Dating back to the Middle Ages through the 16th century, they were the absolute peaks of learning excellence. They were without peer as institutions of higher learning in the world at the time, and indeed were the model for our own university system in the West. Over time, however, particularly under the impact of colonialism, they unfortunately regressed to the point where many of them today are about rote memorization of the Quran and the study of Islamic principles. There are varying opinions as to the degree to which the madrasas are involved in any sort of jihad agenda. There are some who will tell you that they're no problem, they have absolutely nothing to do with jihad. There are others who tar them all with the same brush, thinking that they're all guilty until proven innocent. And, of course, the real truth lies in the middle somewhere. Based on our experience, and we've been in some pretty radical areas, we can attest to the fact that some are involved in this sort of activity. But we approach this with a real air of humility because we're very mindful that it was the United States that helped plant the seeds of jihad in the madrasas in the first place, out of our interest to create holy warriors to evict the godless Soviets out of Afghanistan. The whole Charlie Wilson's war business. Then we left after the Soviets left, and we left these folks high and dry. So some of them are doing exactly what we trained them to do, they've just shifted targets. In the course of all that, for example, there was a $92 million contract let with the University of Nebraska to provide textbooks for the madrasas that are pretty onerous in terms of the sort of agenda that they project. So we're trying to deal with this now. Our goals there have been twofold. First is to expand the curriculums to include the physical and social sciences with a particular emphasis on human rights, particularly women's rights, and religious tolerance. Secondly, and perhaps more importantly, to transform the pedagogies to create critical thinking skills amongst the youth. When we first started this exercise 5 years ago, when a young man would raise his hand in class, he could be punished for disrespect. It was a very one-way flow, so there was no critical thinking involved. Our approach has been a bit unique in the sense that we've tried to mount this effort in such a way that the madrasa leaders feel it's their reform effort. And by the way, we don't use the word reform over there. We use the word enhancement, and that's truly what it is, trying to help them regain a bit of their former footing, if you will. But we've done it in such a way that they feel it's theirs. That means they have a lot of ownership in the process, and unsurprisingly, many of them come up with very bright ideas. and these have been very, very helpful. Secondly, we've tried to inspire them with their own heritage, pointing out how many of the pioneering breakthroughs in the arts and sciences, including religious tolerance, took place under Islam 1,000 years ago. The more they hear this, the more they internalize it, the taller they walk, and the more they begin thinking, hey, maybe we can do better. And then finally, all of the changes that we suggest and that they buy into are grounded in Islamic principles. You know, and the whole idea is that by undergoing these changes, it's very consistent with Quranic teachings, and they can feel that they're becoming better Muslims in the process. So it's, we've now reached the point where we've been involved with some 2,000 madrasa leaders from over 1,300 madrasas. And we feel that we've reached the point where we can start taking this to scale. And taking it to scale will involve the establishing a teacher training institute for training madrasa faculty, developing model curricula, calling upon scholars from each of the sects that are involved with madrasas to come up with best practices and lessons learned from other experiences throughout the Islamic world, exchange visits, and also doing the women's madrasas. Up till now, they've sort of been off limits. But more recently, not only the women who've been asking for it for a long time, but the men are now asking that we also do that, and they used to be points of strong resistance in this process. Well, this is all by way of background, and we have here with us today two of the three panelists that were advertised. Unfortunately, the third, his visa didn't come through, and it won't come through until tomorrow. So he's here in absentia, and I will call periodically upon our project director, Azhar Hussein, who's sitting at the end of the table here, who will also serve as the translator for one of our panelists to fill in any blanks along the way. But we hope for a good period of interactive discussion that I think will be enlightening to everyone. Our first panelist today is Professor Abdul Rashid, who is the he has served as the dean of the Faculty of Islamic Studies at the University of Karachi. He is a respected religious scholar held in very high regard by the madrasa community, and that's very important. One of the things that the madrasas suffer from, frankly, throughout Pakistan is a sort of an inferiority complex. They feel like everyone looks down on them, not only the United States, but the elite of Pakistan. So to have this trust between the madrasas and someone like Professor Rashid is absolutely invaluable. He has been our foremost partner in this effort to provide university training for madrasa faculty that hopefully will lead to a certification process. Right now there are no standards or accountability, and this is a way of introducing some quality control into the whole process, if you will. So without further ado, if I could just call upon you, Professor Rashid, thank you so much for being with us.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum and good evening. I am grateful for CSIS to provide me this opportunity. I would like to say only a few things, and then we will discuss. The first of all, why we started this project and this program to engage madrasa teacher and student in the university. Because my background is also Dini Madrasa, religious institution, and then I got my other education, university and college. And I know that the seed is there. We must try to grow the things. Karachi University, I belong to Karachi University, is the only university of Pakistan who started this project, and we are giving the admission madrasa students at graduate level, postgraduate level, and MS and PhD level. As in madrasa, there are four stages. For the graduation, there's Shahadatul Aliya. Shahadatul Aliya is a certificate equal to graduate, equal to BA. And we are going, and we are giving them admission in the MA. But in MA, they are coming from madrasa, having strong foundation of Arabic and Oriental language and other tafsir of Quran, commentary of Quran and Hadith. We include for them English and other subjects for one semester. And for the last few years, we have produced more than more than 400 madrasa teacher and students as a MA and PhD student. Recently, the program we have started, professional certificates for madrasa teachers. Because I believe the people who are responsible for madrasa education, and we selected the people, not general teacher, but we selected the teacher who are number two in his institution after the first number two, who will be in the future, who will run the institution. So in this way, we are going to prepare the people who will be responsible for the education of madrasa, the institution, but the education which is the dire need of our present era. If we asked, these people, change your curriculum, they will be not ready, and not this is not fair. We are going to provide an environment so they should realize themselves that the change is most important in their journey. And according to my experience, our experience, about this program, certificate course, we are teaching not only the religious subject, but psychology, sociology, English, and other subjects. And now they are demanding that arrange for our madrasa English, speak English language and other things. So I think that this program, we started this program and now is running the program, will be fruitful because we are engaging themselves. We are putting responsibility on them that your madrasa, your institution, you will reform the institution, not government, not our. And from the university, because we will award the certificate and other things, so in this way, their education will be certified by the university and recognized by the university, and further will develop from the certificate course and diploma course and PhD and other things. So in this way, the university role for the reformation, enhancement of religious education is very important. And we have started this, and they are now realizing that their curriculum must be changed, there may be change, and they are eager to know that how we can play our role as a religious teacher for the development of society. And I think if in this way we will continue the program, I hope very soon you will see the change in their behavior, in their education, and their role of for the development of society. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Professor Rashid. And one of the things that he said is so terribly important is that These madrasas, the leadership passes down the family chain. It's the sons of the madrasa leaders who are attending this curriculum. They will be the leaders of the madrasas in the future. So it's a very critical audience, and Professor Rashid has done a magnificent job of attracting all of the very right kinds of people for this training. One thing, too, that's important to keep in mind as he's talking about the university recognizing this training is that past attempts by the government of Pakistan to do something along these lines have failed in the past because they've been authoritarian and in nature, a top-down sort of affair in which the madrasa leaders have felt they feared their loss of independence. And they've also feared the possible secularization of their curriculums, and that's why it's never taken hold. But this is a process where, as I say, they have a lot of ownership, and it looks very promising. Now I'd like to turn to our second panelist, Qazi Abdul Qadir Kamush, who is a from the Ahle Hadith sect in the West, sometimes referred to as Wahhabi, but Ahle Hadith. He's one of our two indigenous partners. The other is a Deobandi partner who is not here. Mr. Kamush has been instrumental in all that we've done. He's been our partner in facilitating many of the workshops, particularly in the northern areas, through... Through his good efforts, at one point I found myself in a room with 57 Taliban commanders up in the Malakand Agency of Pakistan, most of these being Afghans. He rounded them all up so that they could hear what America wanted because they claimed not to know. But he's also been the pioneer. He's the chairman and founder of Muslim Christian Federation International. And in that capacity has taken the leadership in conducting a number of interfaith seminars now between Christian pastors and Muslim clerics, bringing them together for intense three-day encounters where they build relationships, share insights, discuss their problems, and come up with action agendas to pursue those problems. At one end, that has Christian pastors preaching in mosques and also imams preaching in the churches, this kind of give and take. But it also has come up with a sort of a common commitment to oppose extremism in both their communities. And this has led some of the Muslim participants to go into some of the more radical areas and sit down with the local imams to discuss the benefits and for the express purpose of promoting interfaith cooperation. So this is a very critical element. Another initiative where Mr. Kamush has taken the initiative is he's conducted the first program with the girls' madrasas. That was very recently. And also before the last elections, we had a series on Islam and democracy, which, interestingly enough, really turned a lot of minds around 180 degrees. On whether it was desirable to vote or not, and they got a lot of votes out there. But in any event, it's my pleasure to turn to him now to share with you some of his insights, and then we'll go into the discussion period. But Kamush.
Thank you, Dr. Douglas Johnston, President ICRD, CSI SK Intizamia. Main aapka zyada waqt nahi lunga apne lecture ke silsile mein. بلکہ میری خواہش ہوگی کہ میں مختصر سی گفتگو کروں اور اس کے بعد ہم سوال جواب کا سلسلہ شروع کریں.
I said thank you to Doug and also CSIS. I will try to translate as best. I'm not a professional translator, so if I don't do every single thing point by point, don't shoot me. I forgot, I'm not in madrasa. Sorry. And he said that he will try to keep it very short, and he actually would like to have more interaction with you all and all the questions that you have, maybe not all, question that he could answer. That'll be good.
Meri bunyadi taur par jitni education hui hai, wo ek dini madrasa mein hui hai. Aur mera اپنا جو فیملی بیک گراؤنڈ ہے وہ بھی خالصتاً مذہبی ہے. میرے والد صاحب بھی ایک ریلیجس سکالر تھے, بلکہ میرے جو گرینڈ فادر تھے وہ بھی ایک مذہبی رہنما تھے.
A graduate of a madrasa. In fact, that's the only education he has ever received. Never went to a public school system or a secular school. His father was also a scholar at madrasa and only went to a madrasa. And his grandfather also was a madrasa scholar.
بنیادی طور پر کوئی بھی ادارہ ہو اس میں ایک ارتقائی سفر ہوتا ہے اور ہر لمحے کسی بھی ادارے میں اصلاح کی گنجائش موجود ہوتی ہے.
Obviously there is a need for every institution to constantly grow, and this institution has a grave need to continue to grow as well.
برے صغیر میں جو مدارس ہیں ان کے بنیادی طور پر تین سٹیجز ہیں. ایک جو مدارس مغلیہ دور میں بنے, دوسرے مدارس جو برطانوی استعمار کے زمانے میں بنے, اور تیسرے مدارس جو قیام پاکستان کے بعد اور بالخصوص 80 کی دہائی میں بنے.
In the context of subcontinent, which is India and Pakistan, he is dividing a madrasa development in three stages. One is under the Mughal time. Mughal is a kingdom time. Persian kings came and took over India and Pakistan at that time. And the second part, that's when the madrasa were developed to provide administrative role and governance role for the kings. The second part was under colonial time, when British came to India and madrasa developed, and the nature of those madrasas were very different than the nature of the first madrasa. And the third one is development of madrasas were growth of madrasa, I said, was after the India and Pakistan was divided, right?
Especially in 1980.
Oh, right. And so after that, in 1980s, there was another spurt of growth of madrasas.
جو مغلیہ دور کا مدرسہ تھا اس کا رول خالصتاً ایک تعلیمی اور تربیتی تھا. اس کے بعد جو مدارس برطانوی استعمار کے زمانے میں بنے ان کا ڈبل رول تھا, تعلیم کا بھی تھا اور برطانوی استعمار سے آزادی کا دور بھی تھا. اور جو تیسرے قسم کے مدارس ہیں جو 80 کی دہائی میں بنے وہ خالصتاً پولیٹیکل بنیادوں پہ ان کی تشکیل اور تعمیر ہوئی.
Right, like I think I said earlier, in Mughal era, and we are talking about 1492 to, I think, 1800s, the madrasas were mainly providing education for civil society and civil servants serving in the governments. The second was colonial era, 1786 through 1947, when British took over India. And at that time, their role changed to providing education, kind of, he said, but more resistant to the occupation of British. So their role shifted significantly.
اس دور میں جو بڑے نام آتے ہیں سامنے وہ جو انہوں نے ایک رول پلے کیا, شیخ الہند مولانا محمود الحسن, سیدین شہیدین کی تحریک آزادی مولانا ابوالکلام آزاد, مولانا فضل الحق خیر آبادی وغیرہ, یہ لوگ تھے جنہوں نے مدارس کے تعلیمی رول کے ساتھ ساتھ برطانوی استعمار کے حوالے سے ایک بڑا بنیادی کردار ادا کیا.
And during colonial times, talking about usually the major leaders that developed out of madrasas who are still very much a hero in Pakistan and India, played an incredibly significant role in providing the movement for freedom from the occupation.
اب پاکستان کے قیام کے بعد مدارس میں ایک بڑی تبدیلی کی ضرورت تھی, ان کے سلیبس میں, ان کے ریویوں میں, ان کے انداز اور اسلوب میں, جو بدقسمتی سے وقت کے تقاضوں کے مطابق نہ ہو سکے.
So when Pakistan was born, there was an incredible need to develop and reform madrasas and their curriculum, because Pakistan was an independent state. There was no there was no real need to struggle, and the role of madrasa yet still had to change, but that did not happen.
Lekin us waqt badkismati ki intiha hogi jab ziaul haq ke daur mein madaris ka bilkul taleemi aur tarbiyati role jo hai usko mehdood karke ek khas political agenda ki nazar kar diya gaya.
But even more unfortunately, in 1980s, when General Ziaul Haq was in reign of Pakistan, madrasas regressed completely from an educational institution to one of defensive education.
Political.
Political. And they serve more of a political tool than an educational institution.
اس وقت مدارس کا جو نصاب تھا جو 10 سال پہ مبنی تھا اس کو ریڈیوز کر کے 3 سال تک لایا گیا اور اس 3 سالہ یا 4 سالہ نصاب میں اتنا زہریلا ان کو لٹریچر دیا گیا اور اس قدر ان کے ذہنوں میں دماغوں میں زہر بھرا گیا تاکہ ان کو تیار کیا جا سکے افغانستان میں رشیا کے خلاف ایک کردار کے لیے.
Yeah, and the curriculum at that time did reform for the worst. 10-year curriculum was reduced to 3 to 4 years. They wanted to accelerate the graduation part. So, and the curriculum was slated towards teaching quite a bit of hate and indifference and tolerance towards the other, so these folks could be used to fight the Russians.
Ab main is tarikhi tanaze mein nahi jana chahta aur na main ye chahta hu کہ ہم تاریخ کے قیدی بن جائیں بلکہ اس 80 کی دہائی میں جنم لینے والے مدارس نے جو ہمارے اس سارے خطے پر منفی اثرات مرتب کیا اور افغانستان سے رسیا کے جانے کے بعد جس طرح اس مدارس کے فارغ التحصیل لوگ پوری دنیا کے لیے ایک خطرہ بنے ہوئے ہیں اب پھر لو لفظ دہراؤں گا کہ تاریخ کا قیدی بنے بغیر ہمیں اس بڑی مصیبت سے صرف اور صرف مشترکہ جد و جہد سے نجات حاصل کر سکتے ہیں.
Right. Okay. His Urdu is so good. What he's saying is... he's my boss, so I can't say very much. He said that... instead of becoming prisoners to my own history and the madrasa history, we need to really look beyond and see what we could do. In fact, we have to struggle to find a way in which we can engage madrasas constructively so we can turn this very hateful, intolerant attitude from madrasas that all of us created. I think he's using Pakistani rulership especially. And that it is kind of living in that culture and again, without having to dwell too much on history, we really need to get beyond it and find a way to come up with a way to constructively engage them.
Iske liye jo puri duniya se danishwar jinka ye mauzu hai deeni madaras unka kirdar unse nikalne wali jo teamein hain wo iske islah ke hawale se bunyadi taur par 3 tareeke tajweez kar rahe hain.
There are about 3 different ways that world scholars are recommending that we engage madrasas.
Pehla tarika jo aam ek jis pe raaye di jati wo ye hai ki ab in logon ka jo ek kirdaar tha jiske liye inko taiyar kiya tha uska daur khatam ho chuka hai lihaza inko quwwat aur taaqat ke zariye crush kar diya jaye lekin
this important point. The first recommendation from the world scholars, policymakers, is that since these menace folks exist, kind of hate mongers that were created in the 80s and their generation still exist, that the only way to get rid of this problem is to use force, especially military force.
دوسرا جو ایک نقطہ نظر ہے وہ یہ ہے کہ ان کے ساتھ مذاکرات کی طرف بڑھا جائے ان کو مذاکرات کے ذریعے جو ہے وہ مصروف کیا جائے.
Second is to negotiate with them and engage them in a constructive dialogue.
और तीसरा ये है कि वो फिक्री और इल्मी बुनियादें जिस पर एक 20 साल नौजवान को सुसाइडिंग के लिए प्रिपेयर किया जाता है, तैयार किया जाता है, जिस बाइंडर की रोशनी में उसको सुसाइडिंग के लिए तैयार किया जाता है, गैर हकीकी गैर मंतकी कुरान और हदीस की तफसीर करके, उसके मुकाबला में उनकी तरबियत कुरान हदीस और इस्लामी तारीख की वो मिसालें उनकी सही तफसीर करके उनको सीधे रास्ते पे लाया जाए.
And the third way is the current binder that they are using, and when he says binder, meaning the current narrative that they are using to prepare suicide bombers and many destructive ways to get back to the West or seculars, there needs to be another binder created that undermines that one, and that can only be done through Quranic teachings, through hadith, through constructive Islamic teachings, and that work can bring about quite a bit of changes.
हमने अपनी जो बाहमी मुशावरत की या अपनी जो हमारा एक वियन है, जो बसीरत है, हमने तीसरा रखता इस्तेमाल किया है इसलिए कि इंतजामी अकदामात से उस आदमी को काबू करना मुमकिन नहीं है. क्योंकि आप किसी को इंतजामी इकदामात के जरिए जो मैक्सिमम थ्रेड दे सकते हैं वो लाइफ का थ्रेड होता है, तो वो आदमी तो पहले ही जैकेट पहने सुसाइडिंग के लिए तैयार है, इसलिए किसी इंतजामी इकदामात के जरिए उनको इस रास्ते से हटाना या उनके शर से महफूज रहना मुमकिन नहीं है.
He thinks the first one to use force is does not, it kind of nullifies itself, because if you are threatening people that we will destroy you, they are already wearing suicide belts, and so you give them more incentive to destroy themselves, and in fact that backfires and creates more violence in that environment.
Dusra jo unko masroof karne ka tha muzakarat ka zariya, वो इस वक्त उस सारे खित्ते में जो एक अदम एतमाद की फजा है उसमें उसकी किसी कामयाबी की तवक्को मुमकिन नहीं है,
नेगोशिएशन मुमकिन नहीं है,
यानी उसकी कामयाबी मुमकिन है, उसका आगाज करना तो मुमकिन है, लेकिन कामयाबी अदम एतमाद की वजह से जो एक दूसरे पर ट्रस्ट लूज हो चुका है.
बिकॉज ऑफ द लैक ऑफ ट्रस्ट ऑन द गवर्नमेंट एंड द ग्लोबल society, from madrasas and religious leaders, negotiations are also kind of out of question.
Aur teesri baat jo humne ikhtiyar ki hai, kyun ikhtiyar ki hai, is pe thodi si baat karna chahta hu ki humne ICRD ke taawun se jo deeni madaras ke senior teacher aur administrator hain unki training ka jo silsila shuru kiya hai उसका बुनियादी जो तरीकाकार है वो ये है कि वो सारे सवालात, वो सारी कुरान की तशरीह, वो हदीस की ताबीर या इस्लामी तारीख से वो मिसालें जिनकी गलत तशरीह और गलत तस्वीर कशी करके एक आदमी को जिंदगी तबाह करने के लिए तैयार किया जाता है, हम इस जो ट्रेनिंग प्रोग्राम है उसमें ये कोशिश करते हैं कि कुरान और हदीस की सही तफसीर उनके सामने रखी जाए और इस्लामी तारीख से ऐसी मिसालें उनके सामने रखी जाए जिससे उनको इस गलत रास्ते से बाज करके अमन मोहब्बत और बाहमी एहतराम के रास्ते पे गामजन किया जा सके. और इसमें कितनी कामयाबी हो रही है वो इसके बाद मैं बताता हूँ.
In partnership with ICRD, we have developed kind of a hybrid program where his recommendation number 3, which is to undermine their intolerant and hateful binder, where we engage people in question and answers and all of the reservations that they have about trust and threat to their identity. And we provide responses in from the Islamic text, from the Islamic traditions, that undermines their thinking that their way is not the correct way to go. And I like to give you some reports on how successful we are in that.
میں اس سلسلے میں جو ہماری لاسٹ ورک شاپ ہوئی ہے ایک ہفتہ قبل 26 27 اور 28 جنوری کو اس کا جو ہمارا لاسٹ سیشن ہوتا ہے اس میں ہم جو پارٹیسپینٹس ہوتے ہیں ان کو بتاتے ہیں کہ آپ خود بتائیں آزادی سے کہ آپ نے اس ورک شاپ سے کیا سیکھا ہے کیا پایا ہے اس کا کوئی فائدہ ہے یا نقصان ہے نہیں اس میں ہم نے اس لاسٹ ٹریننگ ورک شاپ میں جو سوات ویلی ہے جہاں آج کل لا آرڈر کا مسئلہ اپنے پورے عروج پر ہے اس کے ساتھ جو ملحقہ علاقے تھے ان پہ فوکس کر کے سارے علماء کو بلایا تھا تو ہمارے ہاں جو ایک بڑا متشدد گروپ ہے جماعت الدعوہ یا لشکر طیبہ اس کا ایک صوبائی رہنما بھی بلایا ہوا تھا مولانا فضل الرحمان میں اس کے تاثرات آپ کے سامنے رکھنا چاہتا ہوں کہ اس نے یہ کہا کہ میں جب اس ورکشاپ میں آیا تو میرے بہت سارے تحفظات تھے بہت سے خدشات کے ساتھ میں نے اس ورکشاپ میں شرکت کی لیکن اس میں جو میرے سامنے قرآن کی تفسیر پیش کی گئی حدیث کی تشریح کی گئی مجھے ایسے لگا کہ شاید قرآن 1400 سال قبل نہیں اب نازل ہو رہا ہے اور ہم قرآن کی تلاوت کرتے ہوئے گزر جاتے تھے اور قرآن کا یہ حقیقی مفہوم جو ہے وہ ہماری نظروں سے اوجھل رہتا تھا اس ورکشاپ کے بعد میں جا کر اپنے سارے حلقے میں یہاں سے جو مجھے ایک نئی روشنی اور نور ملا ہے اس کے مطابق اپنے علاقے کے لوگوں کی تعلیم اور تربیت کا انتظام کروں گا
I didn't take many notes on this one because I was in this workshop. I was conducting it. So just recently in January 26th, 27th and 28th, just last week, we conducted a workshop and we recruited people, especially from the Sawat area, surrounding area, madrasa leaders, pretty big madrasa, especially from Jamaat-e-Dawah or Lashkar-e-Tayyaba, previously Lashkar-e-Tayyaba folks. And to give you...
Maulana Fazlur Rahman name.
Yeah, Maulana Fazlur Rahman was one of them. And when he came, he said at the end of the workshop, what we go through this activity, so what have you learned, what are you going to do, what will you do today, what will you do in 1 week, those activities. And Maulana Fazlur Rahman got up. He's a provincial commander for Lashkar-e-Tayyaba, a very big name. He got up and said that when I came in, I had a lot of issues with this. In fact, I thought I am going to walk away knowing more of the secrets than I can use against people. But I'm walking away understanding Quran in a very different way. I felt like we've been learning Quran. I read Quran every day. Rozana mein padhta hun, right. I read Quran every day, but I feel like this is the first time I have really tried to... I really internalized the Quranic teachings of peace and tolerance. And when we... last question was, what will you do? And he said, I'm going to go back and give sermons about my learnings from this workshop, about how we have misunderstood and, in fact, misused Quran in many occasions.
اور 30 جنوری کو جب میں وہاں سے روانہ ہونے لگا جمعے کے دن تو مجھے کم از کم جو اس پارٹی اس ٹریننگ ورکشاپ میں 17 جو علماء شریک ہوئے تھے ان میں سے 16 کے ٹیلی فون آئے کہ آج ہم نے اپنے خطبات جمعہ میں جو کچھ اس ورکشاپ سے سیکھا تھا اس کے مطابق اپنے لوگوں کی ٹریننگ کی پوری دیانتداری سے کوشش کی ہے
And when I was leaving on 30th January to come here from Pakistan to Washington, 16 of the ulamas out of 17 have called and said that we have already done some due diligence and made our communities aware on Friday sermons that what we have learned. And they went into great details of things that they have learned in these workshops and invited questions in a very kind of odd way because there's no question and answer in a Friday sermon.
اور دوسرا بہت بڑا جو اس کا ایک مثبت اثر مرتب ہوا ہے اس سے پہلے یہ جو ہم نے سلسلہ شروع کیا ہے جب بھی کوئی ایسا ایونٹ ہوتا تھا تو میڈیا ان کو ہیرو کے طور پہ پیش کرتا تھا اس قسم کی تصویر کشی کرتا تھا کہ یہ اسلام کے بہت بڑے مجاہد ہیں لیکن جب ہم نے میڈیا کے سامنے ان ورکشاپ کے تھرو جو فارغ التحصیل لوگ ہوئے ہیں ان کا تعارف کرایا ہے ان کے ساتھ نشست کیا ہے اب یہ ایک آپ کے لیے بھی خوشگوار खबर होगी कि अब मीडिया जो है उन लोगों को मुसलमानों के हीरो के तौर पर पेश नहीं कर रहा बल्कि उनको एक मुजरम के तौर पर पेश कर रहा है। ये इन वर्कशॉप के ट्रेनिंग याफ्ता लोगों ने जब अपने अपने इलाके में जाके सोसाइटी के दूसरे लोगों से बात की है तो मीडिया वालों से भी जाके बात की है तो उन्होंने ये लिखा है और अभी ये शायद ला नहीं सके। हमारे मुल्क का सबसे बड़ा जो न्यूज़पेपर है जंग, उसने पूरा कलर्ड पेज इसी नुक्ता नजर को आम करने के लिए शाया किया।
Right, and one major, another major accomplishment of these type of programs is that what media used to portray some of these mujahideen jihadis as heroes, some of these graduates have gone and talked to media and said, you really should not do that, because that only encourages people to fight in a very negative way and a bad interpretation of Quran. And so... just recently, I think 3-4 days ago, the largest Urdu newspaper, Jung, had a color page, full page, of talking about some of our graduates from school saying these are the true mujahideen who are trying to get the message out of peace and tolerance and trying to give a message to their new generation. And this is what we need to aspire to instead of... so there is a shift going on between within media as well.
और आखिरी बात, इसके जो पॉलिटिकल थिंकिंग जो है मुल्क की उस पर कितने मुस्बत असरात मुरतब हो रहे हैं, दो बातें हैं। एक, जब हमने इस इलेक्शन के मौका पर एक कंपेन लॉन्च की तो उसके नतीजा में एक तो मुल्क में वोट की जो परसेंटेज है वो बढ़ी और दूसरी ये है कि मुल्क की सबसे बड़ी पार्टी पाकिस्तान पीपल पार्टी ने अपने इंतखाबी मंशूर में मदारस की जो इस्लाहात है उसको अपने मंशूर का हिस्सा बनाया। न सिर्फ पाकिस्तान पीपल पार्टी ने बल्कि जो राइटिस्ट पार्टी है पाकिस्तान मुस्लिम लीग जिसको मियां नवाज शरीफ साहब लीड करते हैं वो भी अब उस अंदाज से उनको सपोर्ट नहीं करते बल्कि एक ढके छुपे अंदाज में वो भी अब हमारे इस नुक्ता नजर को जो है वो सपोर्ट कर रहे हैं। ये एक सरसरी सा जायदा था और उसके नतीजे में जो पैदा होने वाले मुस्बत असरात थे वो हैं। और मैं एक बात अलावा जहिल बसीरत कहना चाहता हूँ, मैं बुनियादी तौर पर तारीख का तालिब इल्म हूँ और जितनी इस वक्त मुआसर तहरीकें हैं उनका भी मैं एक तजिया रखता हूँ, माजी में चलने वाली तहरीकों के बारे में भी बाखबर हूँ। एक बात मैं कह सकता हूँ कि ये तहरीक जिसका आगाज हमने ICRD के तावन से किया है इसके नतायज हर सूरत में मुस्बत भी हैं, नतीजा खेज भी हैं, समर आवर भी हैं और इनकी रफ्तार जो है वो भी हौसला अफजा है। थैंक यू सो मच।
सो यू गॉट दैट? नो। वेल ही सेड अनदर मेजर पीस वाज पॉलिटिकल मैनिफेस्टोस स्पेशली पाकिस्तान पीपल्स पार्टी अ वेरी सेक्युलर पॉलिटिकल पार्टी हैव आल्सो इंक्लूडेड इन इट्स मैनिफेस्टो थ्रू आवर एफर्ट्स a whole page that how they would go about engaging madrasas, having a kind of a systemic engagement program to bring them into mainstream. And also a party for Muslim League party from Nawaz Sharif, though they have always supported madrasas' kind of unhealthy behavior, according to Khamosh, they are also now starting to talk that what they have been promoting, violence and intolerance, that cannot be accepted, and they're moving towards engagement as well. Thank you very much.
آخری پہلے دن ترجمہ کی تاکید رفتار بہت حوصلہ افزا ہے اور یہ اچھے اثرات جڑے نے وہ جو معاشرہ فائدہ اٹھا رہے ہیں.
Yeah, and he's right, I forgot that. We need to speed up this type of effort more, engage madrasas more fully, and that he has witnessed 6 or 7 major movements within Pakistan in the last 20 or 30 years. He has been a part of many of those. And this is by far the most positive, most constructive, and have a long-lasting impact from his point of view.
Right?
thank you, Mr. Kamush, for your very interesting and insightful presentation. It was very, very helpful. Implicit in all that he was saying was that in a context where religious legitimacy trumps all, the best antidote for bad theology is good theology. And that's really the key to what's going on here. I would like to just point out to you, too, we don't have enough for everyone at this point, but just off the press, within the last 3 days, we have a monograph that speaks to all that we've been doing in Pakistan from the inception to the present, including the results of an independent third-party evaluation by the Salaam Institute for Peace and Justice. These will be on the table in the back as you leave. Any of you who want one, please feel free to take it. Only take one. We don't have enough to go around. And Patrick Moore, if you raise your hand, Patrick, if you don't get one and want one, just give him your card and we will send you one. At this point, I'd like to open it for discussion. Any questions you may have, I'm sure you're full of questions. Sir.
Hi, Isaac Harris from the United States Navy. I had a question about the mixture of madrasas. I mean, obviously there are thousands of madrasas in the region. How many roughly teach a message that is more similar to something of a peace and tolerance, and how many teach a more maybe Islamic fundamentalist, more of the jihad type message today? Either or.
इसमें एक बुनियादी तौर पर बात यह है कि आप किसी भी मजहबी रहनुमा से बात करें तो वो उस वक्त हजरत ईसा अलैहिस्सलाम से भी ज्यादा अमन और मोहब्बत का पैगंबर होता है और हमारे जो मदारस के आम लोग हैं उनसे भी बात करें तो वो भी कहते हैं कि हमारे मदारस में कोई प्रॉब्लम नहीं है लेकिन बहरहाल उन दहशतगर्द ग्रुपों को रॉ मटीरियल जो मिल रहा है उसके बुनियादी तौर पर मराकज यही है हमने बुनियादी तौर पर जो फोकस किया है وہ ایک تو وہ مدارس جو عام نگاہوں سے ذرا دور ہیں رولر ایریا میں کیونکہ جو بڑے شہروں کے مدارس ہیں اس پہ میڈیا کا فوکس ہے ایجنسیز کا فوکس ہے وہاں پر تو ایسی بات نہیں رولر ایریا میں جو بڑے بڑے مدارس ہیں اور جہاں ہماری معلومات کے مطابق ان کے ہب ہیں وہاں سے ان کو را مٹیریل جاتا ہے ان میں ہم نے فوکس کیا ہے اور اس میں ہمیں بڑی کامیابی ہوئی ہے اور یہ سینکڑوں کی تعداد میں مدارس ہیں یہ آپ جب بک پڑھیں گے اس میں بھی آپ کو کافی اس میں جو ہے وہ تفصیل مل جائے گی
I don't know how to translate the first part. It's like most religious leaders in Pakistan or madrasa leaders that you talk to, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference between the Jesus Christ peacemaker and themselves because they always want to play this peacemaker game, but reality is very different. It's hard to tell how many madrasas are teaching peace. But generally, there is quite a bit of unhealthy messages and, in fact, very intolerant messages to a large degree. Some, I wouldn't say most, but some are involved in militancy. Most teach quite a bit of intolerance. We have targeted rural areas on purpose because those madrasas, by far, are the most vulnerable to violence, and we have been very, very successful in that. And he mentions this book again, that it has a lot of details around how many madrasas that are intolerant.
One addition there is the International Crisis Group has estimated that about 15% of the madrasas they feel have any sort of a jihad agenda. If you assume there's 2 million students total in the madrasas, that would be about 300,000. If only 10% of those acted upon the jihadi message, then you've got 30,000. So the numbers are pretty pronounced and pretty significant. But it's very hard to tell what percentage there is when nobody even knows how many madrasas there are, not even the government of Pakistan. There was a hand way in the back against the wall. Yes.
My My name is Leah Frage, and I'm working for the Extended Service Delivery Project. It's a global project funded by USAID to improve service and access for family planning. And we work with religious leaders, and we're expected to work with religious leaders in Pakistan soon. And basically what I'm wondering then is the work that Dr. Abdul Rashid is doing in terms of trying to provide professional certificates for those that graduate from the madrasas. Is that going to be something that is standardized throughout Pakistan, or is it for specific madrasas? And what do you aim to achieve with that by the end?
We started from University of Karachi, but we are planning to introduce this program over the country in all the university. And you said you have visited Pakistan, Pakistani people, ulama, you discussed the family planning. And we are also, our team from our faculty, they have attended and organized so many programs, not only for this madrasa teacher, but not only from the madrasa, but from the civil society to promote the tolerance and development of society with the help of university and madaris, the both.
I would just add to that that we just returned from Pakistan. Was in Islamabad for a couple of days, and we met for the third time with Chairman Sumaro, the chairman of the Senate, who has been very encouraging. In fact, has offered, volunteered to help us to introduce this into other universities. And he himself, who is a former provincial governor, volunteered to go with us to meet with the governors of the other remaining provinces, who are the chancellors of the universities, and then they in turn work with the vice chancellors who actually control them. But we think there's a great opportunity here. The program that Professor Rashid has been, this is the first pilot project. It's a six-week training program. There's going to be three of those, and then we'll go from there. But one of our immediate challenges is the resources to be able to do this, of course.
You were next. Colonel Dutta, Foreign Policy Association. I've got two questions, one from Dr. Abdul Rashid, and the second from Qazi Sahib. First question for Dr. Abdul Rashid. You have really articulated the system of education. Could you please tell, would there be a co-education also envisaged? Second question is from Qazi Sahib. Ki Qazi Sahib, aap bata sakte hain कि ये जो न्यू एक्सप्लेनेशन आपने कुरानिक एजुकेशन या उसकी इंटरप्रिटेशन की दी है इससे टेररिज्म कम हो जाएगा आई वुड ट्रांसलेट इट फॉर द अदर्स दैट वुड द न्यू एक्सप्लेनेशन व्हिच काजी साहब आर्टिकुलेटेड वुड दैट लेसन टेररिज्म व्हिच हैज बीन परपेचुएटेड बाय लश्करे तोबा तोयबा सॉरी
Thank you, sir. Alhamdulillah, at master level, we have classes, co-education. As you know, the Karachi University, there is co-education and more than 60% are female students. And in the same room, they have classes, the student from college and student from madrasa, number one. Number two, this program, professional certificate, we just started from 15 January. This is only for teacher of madrasa, but the coaching, who teaching, they are also, for example, if we have 10 faculty members, out of 4 faculty members are female. So the environment is improving. or there will be, I think, no problem for co-education for these people.
आपने जो सवाल किया है उसका जवाब यह है कि हमने नई तशरीह नहीं की बल्कि हकीकी तशरीह की है. और दूसरी बात हमने नई तशरीह नहीं की बल्कि कुरान की हकीकी और असली तशरीह की है. दूसरी बात कि उसका असर कबूल होगा कि नहीं, मैंने एक एग्जांपल दिया मौलाना फजलुर रहमान की, लेकिन हम जो 3 साल से ये ट्रेनिंग प्रोग्राम कर रहे हैं इसमें सैकड़ों ऐसे मिसालें हैं कि जो लोग इस प्रोग्राम में जब आए तो उनकी थिंकिंग और थी, उनकी सोच और थी, और जब इन वर्कशॉप से वो वापस पलटे हैं तो उस वक़्त वो बिल्कुल एक नए इंसान और नए दीन के मुबल्लग और आलम बन के वापस गए.
He just gave you one example of Maulana Fazlur Rahman about, and he differ a little bit with you that it's not a new translation of Quran that we are giving. It is the translation of Quran, and yeah. Sometimes it is used as a political means to create violence and jihad. But so we are trying to infuse a what we feel a true. What do you call it, Ruh, or soul of Quran, which is predominantly peace and reconciliation-based. But there are literally hundreds of examples of our workshops. We have done close to 2,500 madrasa teachers training, 2,500 of them have been trained. There's literally hundreds of examples of Maulana Fazlur Rahman from Lashkar-e-Taiba type, who have not only shifted their focus, but also promote this this work. They have done reconciliation peace workshop within their own madrasas, despite threats. Some of them have been targeted, and some have been actually been killed through our because they were in our program. So there is quite a bit of momentum developed. It is hard. I mean, my title is preventive diplomacy. And the problem with preventive stuff like this is that when you have a full fire and somebody put that fire out, they become a hero. But prevention, you never know what kind of difference you are making. And we believe that we have made quite a bit of a difference there.
And in this regard, I want to mention a little bit. Now, John Kaider Sahib came here in the last week in Pakistan. انہوں نے ایک کتاب لکھی ہے کمانڈر آف دا فیتھ فل لائف اینڈ ٹائم امیر عبد القادر الجزائری. اس کی جو ہم نے مختلف شہروں میں تقریبات کی تو وہاں ایک سوال پیدا ہوا کہ آج جو لوگ جہاد کے نام پر کام کر رہے ہیں ان کو دہشت گرد کہا جاتا ہے, امیر عبد القادر الجزائری کو کوئی دہشت گرد نہیں کہتا, وجہ کیا ہے؟ تو یہ ہم نے ایک نیا لوگوں کے سامنے آپشن آیا کہ امیر عبد القادر الجزائری جو تھا وہ جب اپنی آزادی کی جدوجہد کر رہا تھا تو اس میں وہ انسانی بنیادی جو حقوق ہیں ان کو پامال نہیں ہونے دیتا تھا, اور اپنی جو جدوجہد تھی اس میں عصبیت نہیں آنے دیتا تھا. اس کی مثال ہے کہ ان جب انہوں نے فرانس سے الجزائر کو آزادی دی تو آخر کار وہ دمشق میں آ کر آباد ہوئے, تو دمشق میں جو دروزی قبائل تھے جو سیرین کے پرانے قبائل ہیں انہوں نے دمشق میں جو کرسچن سوسائٹی تھی اس پہ حملہ کر دیا. تو امیر عبد القادر الجزائری ان کرسچن کی سیکورٹی کے لیے, تحفظ کے لیے ان کے دروزی قبائل کے سامنے کھڑے ہو گئے. تو دروزی قبائل کی جو لیڈرشپ تھی اس نے کہا, امیر عبد القادر تو اپنے ملک میں کرسچن کے خلاف لڑتا رہا ہے, اب تو کرسچن کی تحفظ کے لیے کھڑا ہو گیا, یہ کتنا کھلا تضاد ہے. تو امیر عبد القادر الجزائری نے کہا کہ میں کرسچن کے خلاف نہیں تھا اپنے ملک الجزائر میں, بلکہ میں ایک ظالم کے خلاف جس نے الجزائر کی آزادی چھینی تھی اس کے خلاف تھا. اگر یہاں ظالم تم ہو تو میں جس طرح اپنے ملک میں ان کے خلاف لڑا تھا, یہاں کرسچن چونکہ مظلوم ہیں وہ مبنی پر حق ہیں تو میں ان کے تحفظ کے لیے آؤں گا. تو یہ ہم ایک حقیقی تصویر ان کے سامنے ایک تاریخی مثال کے طور پر آج پیش کر رہے ہیں کہ اگر آج بھی تم امیر عبد القادر الجزائری کو فالو کرتے ہوئے اپنی جدوجہد کرو گے تو تمہیں کوئی دہشت گرد بھی نہیں کہے گا. ایسی مثالیں دیتے ہیں ہم جن سے ہم کوئی نئی تشریح نہیں کرتے بلکہ اپنی حقیقی اصل قرآن کی جو روح ہے وہ بتاتے ہیں,
और अपनी तारीख के जो ओरिजिनल और जेन्युइन हीरो है उनका किरदार सामने पेश करते हैं.
यस. You can tell he's very passionate about this subject. In our recent trip, I'll make it very short. In our recent trip, just ended last week, we took one of our board members. His name is John Kaiser. He wrote a new book called Commander of the Faithful.
Back in the corner back there.
So yeah,
raise hiding. Your hand, John.
He's hiding. He wrote a book about a jihadi. Abdul Qadir al-Jazairi, who fought with French to free Algeria. From French colonies. Now, he's a, what in Islamic sense, what you would call it, is a true jihadi, because later on in his life, he lived in Syria, and when Muslims attacked Christians, he defended them just as committedly as he was defending Muslims. And when people ask him, why are you defending Christians from, you know, Muslims? And he said, because I never fought for hate. I always fight for oppression, against oppression. And so these are the kind of examples. We did book openings in 3 or 4 cities in Pakistan. Most of the audiences were madrasa folks. A lot of them were very interested in getting that book translated and teaching to their kids. Saying that we do need those examples of true Islamic figures who have struggled for the right reasons.
Other questions? Yes.
I can go on.
Assalamu alaikum. My name is Taha. I'm with the Pakistani American Leadership Center. First of all, for Qari Khamosh, it's very inspiring to hear your words. Because a lot of times for Muslims, as Muslims in the West, you know, when we hear about these stories about the Taliban destroying schools and these sorts of things, and, you know, and at the same time, we know that there's a legacy starting maybe with Aisha radiallahu anha and going on down of women scholars, we wonder, you know, where is the Taliban getting their theology from? And as for, you know, Doug Johnson and Dr. Rashid, you mentioned that there might be a lack of resources. I know that there's some worry about taint if you take money from maybe USAID or the U.S. government. What kinds of numbers are you guys looking for? What's the target that you would need to kind of scale up like you were talking about?
Well, to do the whole job completely, we think it probably takes $50 million over a 10-year period. In immediate terms, we probably need about 3.5 to really scale up at this point. You know, one thing I would just mention, too, I talked before a little bit about how the bad theology and the good theology. One example that I think is kind of interesting is that not too long ago, it was probably about 5 months ago, that Khamosh and Ozzy were conducting a workshop in Punjab. It was known to be a major al-Qaeda feeder. About 22% of the graduates went into al-Qaeda. But because of their location in Punjab, rather than going to fight Americans in Afghanistan, they would go to Kashmir, become part of the militancy there. During the course of the workshop, one of the participants asked, is waging jihad in Kashmir sanctioned by Islam? Ozzy said, no, it's not, but I'm not a religious leader. So he turned to Khamosh, who enjoys at least honorary mullah status, and the answer was, no, it's only permitted to defend the faith, never to acquire territory. Well, this led to an intense debate between the madrasa leaders that were present, and they came up with a consensus conclusion that the fighting in Kashmir was politically motivated but not religiously sanctioned. And that, in turn, has created a buzz on how can they tone down the militancy of their graduates. And I was surprised in my next-to-the-last trip to Pakistan to find that episode was carried in the newspapers way over in Balochistan. So the word really gets out. But this is, you see, sort of displacing the ideas behind the guns, if you will, with better theology. So, yes, over here. We haven't hit this. Oh, sorry.
Islam
Right. Your question about Taliban burning down the schools, etc. He's like, they are truly not Islamic at all. They are manipulating it completely, criminals. And in fact, the first part of Islam or Quran is to read and learn and to raise your consciousness and to educate a female is to educate a whole family and a whole community. And Islam stresses that very much. So burning schools is not only criminal, it is against Islam.
Quarter Islam ek aurat ki riwayat se hai.
Kya matlab hai uska?
Yani Islam ka chauthai hissa jo hum tak pahuncha hai hadees ka, wo hum kehte hain Hazrat Aisha Siddiqa uski rani.
One quarter of Islam that came to us is through a woman. She is the one who narrated all of the hadees of Prophet Muhammad. So it's not something you should take it seriously.
Yeah, over on the side here.
Yeah, hi. My name is Mindy Reiser from the United Nations Association. I want to ask Dr. Rashid a little bit more about the women, the young girls in the madrasas and their curriculum. How different is it from what the young men study? How many years do they usually go? Would a family that sends a boy to a madrasa send the girl as well? And do they themselves then serve as educators in their families after this training, or is that deferred to the husband?
The first thing there, the curriculum is not different, but short. For example, madrasa for male madrasa, for example, 12 years, for female, 10 years. No different, the curriculum is same, but only short. And what is your other question?
Yes, I wanted to know if the people who send their girls to the madrasa would be the same families that would send their boys, and what do they expect when the girls complete the madrasa, that they will be well-educated and able to serve their families as teachers and models of Islamic behavior?
Yes, of course. Because we are building the bridge between madrasa and university. For mother, only to develop their family, to produce a good family. Because if you know, if she learned the Islamic education, it means she will develop his family on these education and manner and other things. So there is a useful for a better family, and if family is better, then the society is better. In this way, they are expecting this, that she will be very useful for the development of society.
Pakistan mein is waqt National Assembly mein 33% khatin ki numaindagi hai.
He's saying that 33% of National Assembly of Pakistan is consists of women, and the speaker is a female as well, which enjoys a very high status. But he says there are many challenges in Pakistan when it comes to gender divide. But we are doing our part by doing workshops for madrasa, female madrasas, and we have found that it is actually usually for male madrasas we have done 6 to 10 day workshops, other than the universities. But for female we have done 3 to 4 days workshops, and we get the same amount done, and in fact we get a lot more willingness and motivation. And they end up doing a lot more in their community with those 3 days. So he's like, we can get a lot done a lot faster if we just do it right.
On the side and then in the back. Please.
Yeah, thanks, Doug. And thank you. Very, very interesting presentation. I'm Peter Kovac from the Department of State. I've served in your great country. And I have a question, and it's really coming from kind of a Christian platform. We in Christian seminaries struggle an awful lot with the issue of different historical interpretations of the Bible. It's still a very controversial issue. A lot of the Protestant seminaries teach this and teach hermeneutics and historical interpretation. Some of the higher church people don't believe in doing that. The Quran, I recognize, is a much more central manifestation of God in a way in Islam for all Muslims than, sociologically speaking, it is for some Christians. But it seems to me, and from one of your earlier remarks where you said, well, someone had kind of had an encounter and walked away interpreting the Quran quite differently, how systematically is it possible to teach the history of Quranic interpretation through Muslim history, in a Sharia faculty in Pakistan? Is that a fair? If that's an unfair question, tell me. Yeah, how is it possible in a Sharia faculty where the elders of the madrasa system and other great teachers are educated? How possible is it to teach the history of different interpretations of the Quran? I mean, I'm not talking about non-Muslim interpretations, but Muslim interpretation of the Quran through history. Because that, as I say, even in Christianity, that raises a certain controversy.
I think he responded to a different question. But he's talking about just like Catholic or Protestant and different groups in Christianity, Muslims have different sects as well. But there is the basic interpretation of Quran, basic principles of Qurans are similar. And he gave example, if you want to go to New York, somebody says the best way to do it is to take an Amtrak, or somebody will say, let's go in a Mercedes car. I think this is the level of difference there is. But if you go back to the basic principles of the first century Islam, where there was no real sectarian divide at that time, then you can find the implementation of Quran to be quite consistent with the teaching. This is his answer. Now, if I can respond to your question a little bit more, just I think what you're saying, systematically providing education of Quran in a way that is consistent.
Of interpretation of the Quran.
Right.
I mean, for instance, example, I went to a Muslim conference about 3 years ago representing the State Department, and I studied religion myself, so this is of personal interest mm-hmm. to me. There was a Quranic scholar, a Muslim, who took two or three passages from the Quran and looked at the way they'd been interpreted over the centuries somewhat differently.
Right. Right. I think that'll be a very hard thing to do. I think what, from my perspective, what's important is to teach a different narrative's interpretation of Quran to the same students. But to have consistency, then you wouldn't have any ijtihad, reinterpretation, which is part of Quran, which is you got to constantly reinterpret Quran in the light of what the challenges are today. So that narrative does change. And so the best you could do is to have different narratives be taught to all students. And I think that's where the balance would come.
That's obviously what I'm driving at. If you educate like that, you get creative thinking within the, you know, obviously within the tradition. These are sacred books we're talking about.
So. Well, Peter, they, as you well know, they have this process of ijtihad, which is kind of a periodic reexamination of how one's religious values informs one's daily walk in light of major changes in the external environment. And that was shut down for some period of time, and now there's an attempt to resuscitate it. We have time for just two more questions in the back.
Yes, sir. I am Dr. Nisar Chaudhry with Pakistan American League. I must commend the job the center is doing for switching on lights in dark rooms. Let me tell you that you mentioned about militancy. There is militancy going on in so many countries of the world, including Somalia, in Palestine, in Kashmir, in Pakistan, in Afghanistan, and many more. Does the problem in Pakistan is connected to madrasas when every religion preaches peace, understanding, and harmony, whether it's Buddhism, Hinduism, Islam, Christianity, or Judaism? So is it the religion responsible for this or the madrasas? Is this problem much bigger and larger than restricted to madrasas, or it is restricted to madrasas only? Thank you.
I'll start out while the real professional is thinking about it, but I think that the problem is much larger than madrasas. And unfortunately, the madrasas, like all of religion, are far too easily co-opted by power politics, and they get used. And that was what happened under President Zia. They started being used in the wrong way. And so, you know, this is just, you know, one small attempt. It's one piece of a much larger mosaic, but it, as you rightly point out, it is far larger than just the madrasas. But we think the madrasas are important because in the final analysis, the kind of minds that are getting changed as we talk here, they represent a potentially a very potent counter to the extremism. You know, they can not only, it's not a matter of neutralizing them, it's a matter of getting them as champions of what they really believe to be the peaceful intent of their theology and standing up to those who are misbehaving, as it were. But do you, any more?
پوری دنیا سے لوگوں کو جمع کیا گیا تھا اب جب ان کا ٹارگٹ انہوں نے اچیو کر لیا جس کے لیے جمع کیا تو بدقسمتی سے ہم ان کو کسی اور آگے کام میں انگیج نہ کر سکے جس کی وجہ سے چھوٹے چھوٹے گروپ جو ہیں وہ مارد وجود میں آ گئے تو اب چونکہ بنیادی طور پر ان کا تعلق اس وقت بھی مدرسے سے تھا تو اس لیے مدرسہ زیادہ زیر بحث آ جاتا ہے اور چونکہ وہ ساری ان کی ذہن سازی مدرسے کی عمارت میں ہوئی تھی اس لیے اب جب بھی کوئی تجزیہ کرتا ہے تو وہ مدرسہ زیر بحث آتا ہے اور چونکہ اس عہد میں جو کچھ کیا گیا ہے وہ تاریخ کا حصہ ہے اس سے ہم اب نہ انکار کر سکتے ہیں نہ انحراف کر سکتے ہیں لیکن اب ہم ضرورت محسوس کرتے ہیں, جیسے میں نے ابتدا میں کہا کہ ہمیں تاریخ کا قیدی بننے کی بجائے مسئلے کو سالو کرنا چاہیے, اور یہ جیسے ہم سب کی مشترکہ ایک ہدف کے لیے یہ مسئلہ پیدا کیا گیا, اسی طرح اب اس کو ختم کرنے کے لیے بھی ہمیں مشترکہ جدوجہد کرنی چاہیے, اور اس کے لیے جو آئی سی آر ڈی نے اور اس کے جو دوسرے پارٹنر ہیں انہوں نے جو رستہ اختیار کیا ہے میں سمجھتا ہوں اس میں لاجک ہے, منطق ہے, اور وہ زمینی حقیقتوں کے قریب تر ہے, اور اس آپ کی سوسائٹی سے جو ہمیں تعاون اس سلسلے میں مل رہا ہے اس کے ہم شکر گزار بھی ہیں, اور میں سمجھتا ہوں کہ اس سے زیادہ مزید اس جو طریقہ کار اختیار کیا گیا ہے جو مثبت نتائج دے رہا ہے اس کو مزید فعال اور منظم کرنے کی ضرورت ہے, اور یہی ایک واحد رستہ ہے جس سے اس کی شدت کو کم کیا جا سکتا ہے.
Okay, that was a long response. I think basically what he's saying is what happened in the 80s, of course, created quite a bit of hate. Undoing it is so important because madrasas were the primary agent of creating this very biased hatred forward around jihad towards Afghanistan, and I can go into details where some of the textbooks that they were taught was like, these people drink and they have premarital sex and they wear miniskirts and things of that sort, and so therefore they're infidels and you should hate them and kill them, while Americans do the same thing, and then so what are you going to do? I mean, hate is transferable, guys, and we should just never get in a habit of doing that, using any groups to teach them hate to destroy another. And but once we get in that business, it is so much difficult to undo it. And that's why it requires a collective effort. And what he's saying is he's thankful that there is support coming from the United States as well, that with the international community supports, it is possible to undo this. But it's going to take some time. It's going to take a lot of due diligence. But madrasa is definitely a major part of this effort. I will put a little anecdote there. A lot of people, I think, ask this question, and I've been working for the last 5 years, have done literally hundreds of trainings with madrasas. The impact is, of course, there's maybe less than 2% of the students that goes to madrasas, right? It's a small percentage of Pakistan. But as an engineer or a doctor who gets out of university, if you look at the influence of a madrasa student who becomes an imam or a teacher within the madrasa environment, has an influence on thousands of people on a weekly basis, because influence of preaching, influence of a religious teaching. And so you have to multiply that 2% with literally thousands of people. And I think sometimes that's where a lot of people think that this small number of madrasas could create that level of kind of nuance in that society. But it's totally logical as we see it, where these students get out, or the teachers who are also imams of the mosques are talking to middle class and even upper classes of Pakistan academicians. And so everybody gets to hear their message. I mean, this is the best media you got. So having those messages be healthy and constructive is so much more important. Another piece in Karachi University, I just did a one full week with Dr. Abdul Rashid there. It took us one full week of engagement with these large madrasa leaders, 29 of them from Karachi, to talk to them about why they should not support. They are not involved in fighting, but because of the sympathy towards the Mujahideen, because the sympathy towards the fighters in Sawat or Afghanistan or something, that is more dangerous, in fact, sometimes. And it took us almost a week and a half of talking why it's not a good idea as a religious leader, as a madrasa leader, that you cannot sympathize with the criminal elements. You know, you can't make excuses that, okay, because of poverty or because of injustice, people can start to cut people's heads off or burn girls' madrasas or girls' schools. There is no Quranic or prophetic
saying that allows this. And the fact that it took us 1.5 weeks to talk about it over and over again with these very, very large madrasa leaders who collectively in 16 madrasas that we are doing workshop with run close to 32,000 students will tell you the significance of this issue.
Last
Hello. yeah, it's like I think we basically the same message of getting the international community engaged in getting this thing resolved, undo the biases that was learned. Dr. Douglas Johnston just went to Pakistan, met with Asif Ali Zardari, the president, and even the president says we really need help in undermining this type of hatred and as much help we can get. I'm not talking about funding and all, but help, symbolic gestures, expertise in doing this work possible.
John, you have the last question.
John Kaiser, I'm the author of the book that Abdulkader Hamush mentioned about a manly, saintly, scholarly, and Quranically principled Islamic warrior impressed the West and impressed his fellow Muslims in the 19th century, Abdulkader al-Jazari. My question, in the wake of our of my visit and all the folks that I met, what has been the feedback in terms of Emir Abdulkader becoming a kind of case history model that can be used for instructional purposes and for discussion in madrasas? And do you see his appeal as a kind of model of principled Islamic manliness as cutting across the different sects?
While he's considering that, Abu Bakr, why don't you pose your question, and then we'll try to answer them collectively.
Well, actually, it was not a question, but in response to the question about the systematic study or teaching of different interpretations of the Quran, there is a very rich legacy which centered around the evolution of the madhahib themselves. I just wanted to point to one example, a very famous book by Abu Zahra, a very learned alim from Al-Azhar, who wrote a comparative study of the four major scholars of the schools of jurisprudence.
Schools of thought.
Yeah. The Maliki, the Shafi'i, the Hanafi, and the Hanbali. And what he did, he followed the evolution of these scholars and their lives, and many of them lived at the same time, and some of them actually were students of the others. And how they interpreted the Quran differently in response to new and emerging situations. Even one scholar like Shafi'i, he lived in Hijaz, then he lived in Egypt, then he lived in, and wherever he went, he developed a corpus of fatwas and opinions and interpretations of the Quran that are appropriate to that particular community and to that particular time And so the major lesson that Abu Zahra was coming at is that different interpretations of the Quran do not necessarily mean that the scholars have deviated. It means that they are responding to emerging situations differently, and this is a major lesson. But there is a very rich history of even the discipline of Islamic jurisprudence itself is actually a reflection of that systemic understanding of...
Thank you, Abu Bakr. Kamush, do you have a quick answer to John Kaiser's question about...
Yes, John Kaiser sahab, jab Pakistan aaye, unki kitab ki mukhtalif shahron mein, mukhtalif subo mein jo takribat hui, uska achha feedback aaya. Hamare yahan leading jo newspaper hai, English mein Nation hai, Nation mein half page inke nukta nazar ko highlight karne pe lagaya. Isi tarah Urdu newspaper sabse bada jo hai wo Jung Group hai, usne isko bada highlight kiya, aur khud hamare office mein متعدد میلز اور خطوط آئے, لوگوں نے ٹیلی فون کیے, لیکن میں سمجھتا ہوں کہ اس پر مزید فوکس کرنے کی ضرورت ہے, اور جو ایسے جینون اسلامک ہیرو ہیں ان کو زیادہ سے زیادہ نئی نسل تک متعارف کرانے کی ضرورت ہے, تاکہ ان کو پتہ چلے کہ جہاد کن بنیادوں پر کرنا ہے, اس کی حدود اور قیود کیا ہے, اس کا اخلاقی فلسفہ کیا ہے, اور کون سی چیزیں ہیں جن کو جہاد کرتے ہوئے ہم پامال نہیں کر سکتے. تو میں سمجھتا ہوں اس کی مزید ضرورت ہے کہ عبد القادر الجزائری جیسے لوگوں کو متعارف کرایا جائے.
The response for John Kaiser's book was pretty amazing in Pakistan. Most of the media covered it, some of them covered it in front page. Khamosh's office received many, many calls from madrasas themselves to say, how can we get this book translated in Urdu? But he still thinks that there are more Muslim heroes that can serve as a true model of jihad, rightful, resistant to oppression. There requires more effort. So that was a great beginning. I don't think that would do the trick, if you will.
It's time now to wrap up, and I'd like to just thank Rick once again for sponsoring this and also the South Asia program. It's great to be back at CSIS. I'd like to thank Professor Rashid for his work, Mr. Kamush, and also a rather unsung hero at this table is Azi Hussein, who is really done yeoman service in making this whole thing possible. So let's thank them all.
We should probably mention that the Luce Foundation of New York has been very supportive of both of our organizations, and we're thankful for their help in making these programs possible.